It's time for Dodger Baseball.
Strike three. The Dodgers have won it all in 2020.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dodging Sleep podcast. In fact, not just the Dodging Sleep podcast, the first ever extraordinary, emergency, out of season Dodging Sleep podcast. I'm sure you can probably guess why we're hosting it. But anyway, we're here on the 10th of December. Regular listeners will know that we normally start with an on this day in Dodgers history. My research has let me down, and then the wonderful Mr. Adam Legg stepped forward with a great shout, which is to say that on this day in Dodgers history, in fact in 1935, Jamie Jarrin, I know that won't be how his name is pronounced, so apologies, but the Spanish language voice of the Dodgers was born. So if you're listening, Jamie, apologies again for getting your name wrong, and very happy birthday. And if you're not listening, if anybody knows him, point him in the direction of the podcast, please. My name's Ian Carlson. Joining me tonight, as ever, we have Adam Legg. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm good, thank you. You?
Yeah, not bad at all, not bad. We have young Ian Blees, whose technology worked first time. We think this is the dawning of a new era with the signing of a certain contract. How are you doing, Ian?
I'm good. I think that might be the most British thing we've ever done, the way you've just pronounced Jaime's name there. I mean, I must admit, I don't listen to the Spanish broadcast myself very often due to not being able to understand a word, but I'm pretty sure that Jamie Jarrin is way wide of the mark.
Somebody who played midfield for Middlesbrough in the 1980s, but anyway, apologies again, Jamie. Or however it says. And also joining us tonight, and as ever, doing all of the techie stuff in the production side of things, we've got Mr. Leon Boyne. Leon, how are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, mate. Very good.
Excellent. Well, as I said at the intro, this is a bit of a one-off podcast. No surprises for guessing why we're doing it, with the news breaking yesterday and our phones almost going into meltdown that the one and only Shohei Ohtani has decided to join the Dodgers. So that's really going to be the focus of the podcast tonight. We're going to capture the initial thoughts from the team on what the contract, what the signing means, and then we'll have a bit of a chat about the ripple effect and who else we want to try and get in free agency. So in no particular order, just looking at the top left in my screen, Adam, what were your thoughts when the news broke?
It's a big bloody number, isn't it? 700 million. Like I said to you guys, I was like, I didn't even think I could spend that sort of money. It's just mad. Properly mad.
Worth it?
I think it probably will be, yeah. I mean, I'm not a financial guy, but it probably will be. I mean, he probably will be a two-way player. Not next season, but hopefully the season after. He's won two MVPs, a Rookie of the Year. I mean, you've got to say he's going to be worth it. I mean, shirt sales alone will probably pay for it at some point down the line. And a whole new country will be watching Dodger baseball. That's going to put some money in the bank as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. There was something on one of the US websites. They reckon who's reported it? Sam Bloom and Fabian Adaya of The Athletic. They quoted an anonymous, it's always anonymous, isn't it? An anonymous MLB evaluator who reckons the deal will pay for itself within 6 or 7 years, even on just advertising alone. So that's pretty good. Pretty good.
I think there was a number I saw sort of relating to what the Angels have pulled in, based just on Ohtani, and it said they were getting a figure each year of about 10 to 20 million. And obviously, with the Angels being a sort of a much smaller team than the Dodgers, the potential reach is possibly way greater. So as you say, you know, if he's pulling in 30 million alone in just merchandise and that sort of related sort of activities, that's a significant chunk of the early fee being paid off right there.
Indeed. And just for giggles, I went on the Malibu site for the Sotheby's estate agent, just to sort of see what he might be able to get for his money, because we were chatting yesterday as to how on earth he would spend it. He can get, with 1 year's salary, currently on the market, 27930 Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu, 12 bedrooms, 14 bathrooms, 12,600 square feet for $75 million. Unfortunately, he might be struggling for 33550 Pacific Coast Highway, because that's coming in at $195 million, although you do get 22 bathrooms for that. So maybe that'll be on the contract extension.
Who the hell needs 22 bathrooms? I don't know 22 people.
He could run it as an Airbnb, couldn't he, when he's away?
Absolutely.
Take like the entire daily roster to and all use the bathroom at the same time.
Mr. Blees, what were your thoughts?
Well, as you can imagine, I've had quite a few thoughts. I've already shared some in a Batflips and Nerds roundtable article. Same as everybody else. When you saw the number, I happened to be on Instagram last night when it popped up. So I saw it and I was like, and first of all, because it was like a low resolution image of LA Dodgers like logo. And I just kind of thought, this is someone having me on. This is someone's. And I just looked, I'm like, Shohei Ohtani with the check mark. And I'm like, right, okay, this looks real. So I went back to Twitter, and Jeff Patton had already tweeted it. So I'm like, right, okay, this is looking like it's actually real. And people are losing their minds over it. And then I started to believe it and started to lose my mind over it. You can't get over the fact it's a massive, massive amount of money. But what I found really interesting is actually some of the stuff that's leaked about how the deal is structured. And apparently at Ohtani's request, there is unprecedented levels of deferral on this salary. So think about the Bobby Bonilla deal with the Mets. It's like that, but on steroids. It's insane. Basically, he doesn't want to cripple a team with his payroll. So he wants to get paid, but he's happy to get paid down the line a bit for it. And that's really important for several reasons. Number one, it keeps our luxury tax threshold a little bit within reach. We've still got a few million to play with. Before it comes to us actually hitting that top level.
I think I saw it could be as much as 50 mil or something. Was that?
Yeah, 50 mil is what I saw. Yeah. So plenty of good players you can bring in for that kind of money. And that's good, because as we'll get on to later on, we do still have a need. But in terms of what I saw, there's less petrol on payroll. By the time we actually end up paying a lot of this money, it's going to be worth a lot less than it is right now, just because of the nature of inflation. Like Adam said, I'm not a financial guy either, but I know that my money's worth less now than it was 10 years ago. I could, you know, the price of a pint in a pub 10 years ago was about £3, and now it's over a fiver. And I'm up north, so that's ridiculous. But I think ultimately the best player in baseball, some including myself would say the best player to ever play baseball, as you know, he deserves the biggest contract. You know, he's going to contribute in so many ways. Yes, he's a DH next year, but he's not just a DH, because he's also a DH that runs. He steals bases and he runs the bases really well. He's not your traditional non-athletic DH who can't really do much. You know, he brings a lot more to the table. He's still only 30 years old. And obviously when he's back fit again, he will be a two-way player. We're not paying this money for him not to pitch for us, but he will be a two-way player again. People are talking about, oh, but will he be the same after two Tommy Johns? How many players in the league have had two Tommy Johns now? You know, unfortunately, you can't get to these players at 13 or 10 and 9 and correct the issues in their throwing style, and they're putting too much pressure on their elbow and all that kind of stuff. And Tommy John is now a routine part of being a pitcher in MLB, you would say. There's very few people who've had a full career without getting it. He's the biggest name in baseball as well. You know, think back to the World Baseball Classic, that Japan-USA showdown. And of course, it came down to Ohtani coming into close, pitching to Mike Trout for the final out and getting the strikeout. The market this opens up for the Dodgers, who already have one of the biggest markets in in MLB is insane. With Shohei Ohtani and this contract comes a whole continent of new fans. And I just think that the Dodgers are going to even more so become a global brand for the sport of baseball in the way that if you think back to Kobe Bryant playing for the Lakers, the way that the Lakers were the global brand of NBA. You know, you saw kids walking around in Preston and Manchester wearing Lakers vests in on a cold November. You know, I think it won't be unusual for me to bump into someone wearing a Dodgers jersey or a Dodgers hat, and it has been. So it's just it's another star in Hollywood. The guy is as professional as they've come. Anyone who's worked with him has said this. He's not gonna get caught up in any allegations. He's not gonna have a poor work ethic that leads to him that contributes to a decline or a downfall. He is the epitome of what everyone wants a baseball player to be. And all right, £700 million. It's not our money. It's not our money. The club have chosen to spend it, and I think it is. I think it's money well spent, and I think it will pay dividends. I think it'll be interesting to see what else we do between now and the rest of the start of next season. Because absolutely. right now, we one thing we can't do is give him any more Angels-y style seasons where they're not competing. He's come to Earth to compete and to win, and that's what we need to do now.
I think you're right about the market point. There's an article on the ESPN website about Japanese fans celebrating and going to visit the high school he went to, and they're buying souvenir copies of newspapers already out there and all the rest of it. I mean, that's just gonna grow and grow. Leon, what was your take on it?
Starting from Friday, I was just in a rotter mood, if I'm honest. I spent quite a fair bit of time on Flight Radar 24, following what turned out to be a Shark Tank presenter across the country. And I was fuming, to be honest. Not particularly at the Dodgers. Obviously, wherever he chose, he was choosing it for his own reasons. We can't force a guy to come and be with us. I was convinced he was going to Toronto, as I'm sure quite a lot of people were at the time. There was, it's this... probably going to be rude because he's for MLB journalists at this point. You've seen a lot of apologies already. Saturday I fell asleep and woke up with my phone sort of glowing with notifications. It was very quickly saw that Ohtani had signed, which is it's what we've all been waiting for. If you go back to sort of the pod last year, probably not around this stage. I think we're all sleeping, hibernating at this point. But I think we probably all predicted or thought that Ohtani was going to be the big fish that the Dodgers tried to land. $700 million again. I think it's Jeff Passan that said it is an obscene figure. It is an obscene figure, but it's sports. That sports do, the Los Angeles Dodgers level generate £700 million of revenue sort of fairly easily. Already the team with the highest attendances in MLB. There's potential for growth there as well. I think as Ian says, we could very easily become the team of Asia, if you like, the MLB team of Asia. I think one thing that has probably sort of slipped a little bit in the in all the chatter with Ohtani is that Friedman has apparently been across to Japan to meet with Yamamoto as well. If they can somehow solidify that into a deal, it's incredible for the Dodgers, really. Almost lost for words, to be honest. I think the other factor is the pull of having three absolute superstars at the top of the lineup as well. In trade talks, in free agency talks, is going to be huge. If you can go to an upcoming free agent and go, we've got Mookie Betts, we've got Freddie Freeman, and we've got Shohei Ohtani, three very, very likable guys as well, three very well thought of guys on our team, come and join us. It's huge. I mean, we've been linked with Tyler Glass now, who's a top line pitcher. This is where things really get interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. It'd be interesting, the point about Yamamoto we might go on to in a second in terms of where we might end up. I guess my thoughts, I think everybody's covered it briefly. I suppose, is anybody, particularly in the world of sport, is anybody worth $700 million? No, arguably. But in the world of sport where crazy things happen, relative to what other contracts have been awarded and relative to his performance and the ability to keep going. As I think Ian said earlier, he's only 30. We'll get good value out of a 10-year deal. The market is what the market is, and him being paid a hell of a lot more than all of the other deals around feels appropriate for his quality. Particularly, you only have to go on social media, and there was a debate, I think it was last week or the week before, as to whether he'd already done enough to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. You know, he's 30 years old, and you know they're already saying he's probably done enough to get there. What is he, the only person ever to win to win MVP twice off unanimous votes, I think. You know, extraordinary player. And yeah, I'm sure if somebody else had signed him for that, I would have been saying 700 million. Ha, but it does. So we'll have that. Adam, where do we go next, given that he's not going to be pitching next year and we know that we need some pitchers? What would you like to see them still do in this sort of free agency period?
I'm really into the rumor that's going around of Glasnow and a Rosarena. I think we're probably a little bit short in left field. I think he'd be a really good bat there. And we need pitching. I don't think we're as desperate as some people are making out, because I mean, we've got Buehler coming back and we've got good kids coming through. We saw that last year. They're a year further into their development. But we do need at least one other pitcher, maybe two at a push. Glasnow, I'm really up on. I'd really want us to get Yamamoto. If that one doesn't come through, I could probably be disappointed. But I mean, there's enough in our development systems where we could go out and still trade. Yeah, I'm really up on Glasnow. Just feels like a Friedman purchase, doesn't he? Slightly injury prone pitcher. He just seems to be a fit. I think he'd fit in well. The other thing I read or I heard it on a podcast this morning that the Angels used to run a 6-man rotation with Ohtani, so that might be something we might be looking to do in the future, but probably not this season, but the season after. So there might be some considerations for a pitcher further down the line as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. A bit like, as I think somebody said earlier, about a year ago or whenever it was, as we were coming into the new season, and we were chatting about what we had or hadn't done in free agency, and this general view that the Dodgers were getting ready to go for Ohtani this time round, and therefore didn't do too many big signings a year ago. If they know that they're going to get him pitching in a year's time, if they know that Dustin May should be back in a year's time, Buehler will clearly have then had an extra year under his belt. Clearly they're not sitting out because they just signed Ohtani, but whether they think about pitching over the next 2 to 3 years rather than just for this year and build up. But Ian, what do you think?
Well, The crux of it is, I think, where we are short is starting pitching, outfield, and right-handed bats generally. Projected starting lineup for next year has 6 lefties, 3 righties. So Betts at 2, Ohtani DHing, Friedman on first, Muncy third, Smith catching, Outman in centre, CT3 in left, Jay Hay in right. Looks at shortstop. Just a guess at what, you know, if opening day was tomorrow, that's probably the very likely starting lineup. Now, interestingly, a lot of the depth that we have is right-handed, but it's also quite infield heavy. Ironically, I think our weakest player, who's certainly had a couple of down years since he got his contract, is CT3, and he is one of the right-handed sticks. So I don't know whether that pushes a Rosarena a bit down the pecking order a little bit. I love a Rosarena. He's exciting to watch, but I mean, I haven't got the stats in front of me. It doesn't half seem like he strikes out a ton. Like he's really talented, but I feel like he just strikes out so much. I think he gets caught stealing a lot. He feels not really very Dodgers-y. He feels a bit of a loose cannon. I don't doubt if we'd signed him, he would massively help us when it comes to postseason. That's kind of what he's done. Big, he's a real big game player. But I think through the regular season, he'd certainly frustrate me and probably a few other Dodger fans as well if we were to get him. Beyond that, I think, you know, in terms of outfielders that might be available, well, I mean, I'm just going to say this, but, you know, Mike Trout's probably not very happy with the Angels right now. you know, he's sitting there with Anthony Rendon and looking around that dressing room and thinking there's nothing there. Now, I Mike Trout is a pipe dream. We are not signing him, but I wouldn't be surprised if he went somewhere. And if the Angels still had to suck up some of that massive salary he's on, because I'm not sure they're going to be able to rebuild around him. I'm not sure that he's got the fitness to be someone that teams can build around. There's an outfielder coming out of Korea called I think it's Young Hoo Lee, who's eligible this year. Now again, he's another left-hander though, so outfield is looking a bit precarious, and I'm not really sure about exactly which way we will go with that. Which hand does Harrison Bader hit with? He's another one who's available right now. He's a free agent. He's never quite done it. He sprung to my mind once the podcast started, so I didn't have a chance to look into it. I think he's right-handed, so he could be another one. Shift Outman over to left, and put play Bader up the middle in center field. Again, he's another one who I don't think has amazing batting average, but defensively elite, and he's definitely got. He's definitely got something that can be eked out of him, I think. Obviously, the concern right now, the biggest concern right now, we've gone through the right-handed batting situation and the outfield, is the starting rotation. I think our options right now are Miller, Pepio, Sheehan, Yarbrough, Grove, and Gavin Stone. Kershaw obviously is a free agent, and he will be a priority to re-sign. It's interesting because we don't know when he's going to be fit to start throwing the ball again. It's hard if he's not ready for the season. You know, the 40-man roster situation becomes a bit more complicated. You have to DFA someone later on in order to sign an injured player. So it's a tough one because we're not going to have Buehler back in time. We found that out the other day. It's looking unlikely for Buehler to be back. D-May is going to miss the majority of the season, I think. And Gonsolin is going to miss most, if not all, of the season. So a lot of our young pitching talent, our existing pitching talent, isn't available. So we have to look to the... We have to look to the market. We have to look at, obviously everyone's going to look at Yamamoto. Everyone's going to look at Snell. A few people might look at Giolito, but he was atrocious last year, playing in a very bad Guardians team, but he didn't do anything to help them out either. I think his ERA was up over 7. So for me, when you start then looking at Tyler Glasnow, has already been mentioned, Jordan Montgomery, world champion. Jordan Montgomery, who's a free agent following his run with the Rangers. He's got some postseason experience. Almost exclusively all of that is from this last postseason. But he's there. There's another Japanese player called Imanga, who's on the list. And I think that there's lots of different directions. And what we'll obviously do is go and sign Danny Duffy to another deal and then not play him at all.
Who knows? Leah, where do you think we go next?
I mean, just looking at the outfield, I've seen this. Michael A. Taylor has been linked quite heavily over the last sort of week or so. Now he's got to quite a few different places. So I think we're going to see some signings like that, which are sort of perhaps low impact, low cost. Sort of, the established MLB player who will fit into a role. There's also players like Kike still on the market as well. So I think they'll look at players like that rather than a sort of an all-star fielder, where they're going to spend a ton of money to fill that slot. And obviously the pitching situation is something which needs addressing now. Obviously the dream would be someone along the lines of Yamamoto, or Glasnow, but it'd be interesting to see sort of what pieces they move, and whether it's any if they move any sort of established MLB players from the 25-man roster as well.
Yes, it'd be interesting
Is
on the
Max Muncy a candidate, for example, to be moved on? That sort of thing. As it says, CT3, will people be looking to move on him? So it's going to be, I think it's going to be a really interesting few weeks ahead.
Yeah, a couple of you have mentioned Yamamoto. It'd be interesting to see whether, I mean, I don't know the guy clearly, but whether he would want to, he's clearly a huge name. Would he want to join a team where, despite how huge he is, he'll be the, if you like, the second sort of in terms of his domestic market, he'll be the second Japanese player in the Dodgers because nobody's going to be ahead of Otani? Or would he want to go somewhere where he would be the number one Japanese player in terms of that team, just when it comes to profile back home and, you know, merchandising and marketing and all that kind of stuff? I mean, different people view it differently. Some might say, well, he's more likely to join the Dodgers because there's somebody there that he can relate to. He can, you know, can sort of show him the ropes kind of thing. And there's an element of just feeling a bit more comfortable when you're in a foreign country. So you're nodding away there, Ian.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Yamamoto said, I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago, that his preference would be to join a team where there were already some Japanese players, or at least a Japanese player. So it definitely doesn't weaken our position. Dodgers obviously had Hideo Nomo as well in the 90s. Now, actually, that's probably before Yamamoto's time. But you know, we are an entity known to the Japanese baseball community as well. So I think I don't think we're weaker in it. I think what I'm hearing is that there's a lot of talk that he's going to get offered 300 plus million now, as teams sort of panic buy, which is a huge amount of money for someone who's never pitched in MLB so far. So we'll have to see. I mean, he's pitched really well in the World Baseball Classic against MLB hitting, and you know, the MPB is really high standard in itself. So you know, we'll just have to see who comes out there. Personally, I think if we can come up with some kind of deal where we offer him a low contract, front stacked, with an opt out after 2 years. So we might offer him, say, I don't know, say low, 200 million, but over 8 years. And then he can opt out after 2 years if that's not right for him. If he thinks he can go get a load more, he can opt out after 2 years. But you know, there might be a way that we can the way that we can entice him in.
On the grounds that 2 years gets us through the kind of injury crisis, as it were, with some of the guys, plus some of the youngsters would have had an extra couple of years to develop, and the farm system and everything else, it could replace him at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thinking. My thinking is just you know, it's completely pie in the sky. And I think what we've seen with the Ohtani deal, I mean, where we've been talking about it over the off season, even if not on the podcast, you know, a lot of us were talking about, oh, is he going to get less money now because of the injury? Is he going to our team's going to offer this? Is there some kind of incentive deal that they could do where he gets paid extra if he pitches? And the answer is no. It's about guaranteed money. So I think that's what he's going to be looking for as well. One name we've not mentioned yet on the pitching side of it, or if we have, I did lose the feed for about 30 seconds when Adam was talking. It's Dylan Cease, who's another name who's been being looked at as a potential trade candidate. I think we've got a lot of players that we either need to or could move on. I don't want to just keep talking without giving other people the opportunity. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Austin Barnes moved on. I think he probably wants to play every day. I think he's good enough to play every day in many organizations, but not the Dodgers. He's not as good as Will Smith. We haven't, at this point, got the Kershaw personal catcher situation to worry about too much. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Barnes moved on. We have to clear two names for the two signings we've already made.
Yeah.
Because we've already signed Joe Kelly. We've already signed Ohtani. We have to clear two names. And I think, for me, you're looking at Barnes, maybe Miguel Vargas. It didn't quite work for him last year. Maybe he'll get an opportunity with another team to try and build that up. And I think Victor Gonzalez is gone. If we can't trade him, he'll probably get DFA'd. He's never rediscovered that form.
He's been heavily linked with this trade with the Yankees. I don't know if any more. That was last thing I saw before it came online. So he was one of the names that seems to be doing the rounds. So
we shall see. We might need another emergency podcast depending on what blows up over the next few days. But we'll certainly keep a lookout, and if there's a need for one, we will be back online. It's a relatively short and sweet one this time around, because there was only, as I said at the outset, kind of one key topic. Anybody got anything more to add on it?
I've got a question to ask, if I can. If we are able to trade for an elite starting pitcher, our number one prospect is Dalton Rushing, who is a catcher and first baseman. He's catcher all through, catcher, first baseman, and probably DH. And what we can say right now is that I believe he is not an amazing defensive catcher. And first base and DH are locked down. First base is locked down until 2026, or the end of 2026. DH is locked down for the next 10 years. So my question is there a situation where we might be convinced to trade our number one prospect? Is there someone out there that we might consider giving up our number one prospect for?
Possibly. I mean, we can't keep holding on to all these good young players that we've got coming through the system. So at some point, a big name is going to go. I mean, there's a chance I could see Cartaya going as well. And he was high last couple of years. But I mean, Bush, I think he could be on the trade block as well. I mean, there's a lot of names there who I'm struggling to see actually breaking through, like Andy Páez,
yeah.
I can't see how he's ever going to break it through, but I think he would be good in another system. I think where he might actually get MLB time.
If you're sticking to the theme of saying names wrong, it's Andy Páez, we'll call him. Jamie Jarrett.
I knew it wasn't Páez, that was the one thing I did know.
I think it'd be interesting to see. I think Bush was mentioned. I think Ben Stone is a part of it as well. These guys that are 25, 20 years old, so are they at the age where the Dodgers potentially think that, you know, they're not going to make it, and they're going to move them on?
Yeah, I think somebody summed it up nicely. That at some point, if you're not going to play them, you may as well trade them and get something for them.
That's it. The one thing about Páez, I think, is that he is a right-handed outfielder, and so he may actually get some reps. He's due to graduate, I think, this year, so he may get some reps this year. It's an interesting one. I know we wanted to keep it short and sweet tonight, so I won't ask any more follow-ups. But I think it's an exciting time to be a Dodgers fan.
It's an amazing time.
There's no better way to start our off season. You know, this trade is now done, and I think now, even just being a general MLB fan, we are going to start seeing a lot of movement over the next month before we get to spring training. So
it could be our busiest off season on the podcast that we've ever had. And we're all up for it, so that's cool. Excellent. Well, hopefully you've enjoyed it. Love to hear your comments as ever on Facebook or Twitter. Anything you think we've missed? Any names we've not picked up in terms of possible trades or pitches or anybody else we should be signing? if anybody thinks that the Otani deal is a shocking one that we should never have touched with a barge pole. Love to hear from you. We might ignore it. We might follow it up. Who knows? Otherwise, can I just say thank you again to you all for listening, and thanks to Adam, to Ian, and to Leon for joining me tonight on the podcast. All the best.